It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, 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 Thunderstruck here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, starting off a new week. Man, it's going to be an interesting week, too. I think a lot of stuff's going to start coming down this week. Why? Because. Now it's election year, and it's going to start getting amped up. We're only about a month and a half away, and I tell you, there's going to be all kinds of things that we need to be afeared of. And who should we be afeared of more? Is it Republicans or the Democrats? Or if you vote in the end, the government always wins anyway. Well, I don't know. Who should we be afraid of? Well, one of the things we talked about last week was this amendments convention to the Constitution. And it is a, you know, some people would refer to it as a con, a constitutional convention. But Nick Dranius from the Goldwater Institute saying, nope. It's an amendments convention to the Constitution. So we were talking about it last week, and I was the only one with a computer screen up here, and I'm looking at it, and one little part, I made an error, and we wanted to correct that so that we can make this part of the archive of the show that we did on Constitution Day last week, and that we get it correct. We want to make sure the audience knows exactly what we're talking about here. Now, Nick didn't have a computer screen in front of him, and he just kind of thought I could read, so, you know, he went along with it, but he wanted to be very clear and make sure we got this correct, because Article 9 of the Constitution was referenced in Article 5 Convention. Now, Article 5 Convention is whenever two-thirds of both houses deem it necessary shall propose amendments to the Constitution, or the legislatures of two-thirds of the states can call for a convention to propose amendments. In either case, when you get done, you have to have three-quarters of the states ratify whatever changes there are before it becomes part of the Constitution. Now, there is a part in there. There's three main parts four main parts. Says what you can't do. One, you have to wait until after 1808. So they were like, look, we're going to give it like 10 years or so before you guys go messing it up. We'll go 10 years and get whatever the heck it is they wanted before you go changing everything. And then there were a couple of things in the ninth section of the first article, clauses 1 and 4. And it kind of got a little confusing. We want to make sure we get that state, that correct. So I got you there, Nick.
Yeah. Thanks, Ernie, for the opportunity to correct it. Those two provisions we both mistakenly, perhaps I can blame my reliance on you, but I knew that it didn't sound right, but I went along with it anyway, so I'm equally at fault. But those two provisions really have nothing to do with the guarantee of a Republican form of government or habeas corpus or anything else. Those were just related to slave trade issues.
Okay, so let's go ahead and go on. The first one, what it says is it references in Article 5. It says you can't change anything that would affect the first and fourth clauses of the ninth section of the first article. So let's go ahead and go over those. So the first one, it doesn't have it numbered. I guess they're just talking about the paragraphs. You know, so that's what kind of confused me on this. Okay, so go ahead and read the first one. Do you have it in front of you?
I do not, no.
Okay, well, I got it. Section 9, Limits on Congress, the first paragraph. I guess they're calling them clauses. The migration or importations of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to year 1808, but a tax or duty may be imposed on such importation not exceeding $10 for each person. Now, what's that referencing?
That's referencing the slave trade.
Okay, so they said you can't change the slave trade. Now shall not be prohibited by Congress prior to 1808, but a tax or duty may be imposed on them not to exceed $10 a person. So what they're saying is that, okay, you can, you know, I guess you can do some kind of a tax revenue duty. Government gets to make money on slaves, $10 a person at the max, and you can't change it or limit it before 1808. So they gave themselves kind of 10 years. We'll see if we can segue out of this slave thing. So that's kind of what that was talking about, right?
Right.
Then the fourth clause, this is where we had the confusion, and I went to Section 4, which was I made a mistake and went to the wrong thing. But what it talks about here, it says, no capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. Now, that was a reference to, I guess, an income tax, or you can't tax individuals. You have to do it on a state level, and they collect it or something like that.
That's correct.
But that was changed, they claim, by the 16th Amendment.
Exactly.
Okay. So that was the only things that were limited. You can't change, if you're going to do an Article 5 convention, to where you're going to have an amendments convention to the Constitution, for a 10-year period, they didn't want you messing with the slave trade. And some people would, you know, think, well, that's kind of immigration. Well, it's kind of forced immigration. So now we have that. And the fourth clause was about collecting of taxes and how they were going to do it. And they go, well, that was changed by the 16th Amendment anyway. So we can go on about the 16th Amendment. I know a lot in the audience going, yeah, but, you know, well, that's a whole other issue. So we have those two limits on an Article 5 convention. And what we were saying is we were talking about, well, it said here in Section 4, they're talking about you can't have anything. Yeah, it was Article 4, Section 4. You had to remain a Republican form of government. Well, you know, I'm saying also we have to be in the union. We have to do. So that's not so. Now, so that's aside from it. What that means, though, is one of my concerns that I had, of course, is that, well, it means you can do whatever you want, right?
Well, that was your concern, but fortunately it still has the proviso that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate, which implies that there will be a Senate for at least those states that are in the Union, and that if there's going to be a Senate, that implies there would be a lawmaking process that is Republican or representative in nature. So we know that a strike-all amendment could not be proposed without consent of every state, which is not, you know, the three-fourths ratification process.
Okay, whoa. Back up. Because this is one thing, and that no state without the state's consent, that kind of opens it up, shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Well, right off the bat, like you say, that means that there's going to be a Senate, right?
Right. And, okay. And presumably the Senate would have something to do, which would involve the passage of laws, and therefore, you know, if you stripped out everything out of the federal Constitution, you'd be basically left with almost what you found in the Articles of Confederation, where you'd have a body that is representative of the states with no taxing authority because appropriation starts in the House, but otherwise the power to presumably enact some sort of law.
The thing, it didn't really say any law. It just said shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Now, what's interesting in this was the 17th Amendment. It used to be that the state legislatures would select who the two representatives of the state were into the Senate. So that's where you got the people having all their congressmen in there wanting to spend all kinds of stuff. Well, you had the Senate that kind of represented the interest of the state. That way you would have none of these unfunded mandates kind of thing. So then they did the 17th Amendment that kind of, okay, now the Senate is directly elected by the people, just as the House of Representatives are. So now they're going that the state shall not be deprived its equal suffrage in the Senate. And I'm going, it kind of seems like they already are with that 17th Amendment. That could be argued, don't you think?
Yeah, it could be, and actually I took a look at that. It does not look like any effort to challenge has succeeded. I think a plausible argument could be made on that, that it interferes with the suffrage of the states, but then the remedy would be to limit that amendment to only those states that consented to it. But at the same time, I think an argument could be made that since the same number of senators are present in regards to each state, and that has not changed, that their suffrage, their number of votes, which is what suffrage usually refers to, did not get changed. So I think the lawyers could have at it either way. I think the stronger argument is that their suffrage has not changed because they have the same number of votes.
Oh, it's whatever the Supreme Court says. Can you stay another segment? You got time for us next week?
If you want me, if there's no more crow to eat.
No. I think, one more segment. We'll just clear this up. We know what we're talking about here. I just want to get it clear so that we understand what we're really dealing with in this amendments convention to the Constitution. We'll be right back here and declare your independence. We'll go to our institutes, Nick Dronius, and we'll get it all ironed out.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, Phoenix.com, where we're talking about the future's coming, man. What are we going to be able to do about it? I'm not really sure, but we need to understand what's being advocated. And Nick Dronius was good sport last week. He came in, and we just want to make sure that we're getting everything understood. What's happening with this call for an amendments convention to the Constitution. Now, I guess it's bad form to call it a constitutional convention because it's an amendments convention to the Constitution. I'm not really sure what the difference is, but it's marketing, man. Just marketing. So, Nick, go ahead now. Now we understand that the one things that they're saying we can't change doesn't really matter anyway because they already got changed. All right? One, we don't have slavery anymore. Two, they changed the amendment regarding taxation, brought in the income tax. And then they said the other thing about depriving the states of equal suffrage in the Senate. Well, the 17th Amendment kind of screwed that up. So the people select who our senators are in the Senate that was supposed to be appointed by the legislatures or the governors, or say it represented the interest of the state. That's kind of how you would prevent these unfunded mandate things going to the state. They say, hey, we passed a law, and therefore you got a whatever. And you go, whoa. If we appointed senators, guess what? It would have never passed the Senate. So we're really looking at they can pretty much do anything that they want. So, I mean, do I get that from you? Is that once they call an Article 5 amendment convention, they can pretty much do whatever amendments that they deem appropriate?
No, they can't.
They can't do what?
First of all, it's not clear that the change of the vote from legislative appointment to popular vote denies states of their equal suffrage. They have the same number of votes. And you have the large and small states represented in disproportion to their population. So it's not necessarily the case that the 17th Amendment in any way changed that. But the bottom line is that you can't do a strike-all at this kind of convention like occurred in the 1787 convention for all intents and purposes. The convention that would happen to propose amendments would be within the scope of the Constitution based on its rules. And that means that whatever it generated, even assuming that it ran away, as some would put it, would still have to be ratified by 3/4 of the states, or 38 states. So the chances of any sort of proposal coming out of an amendments convention that would radically change our government would be directly related to the degree of consensus that existed in the country for it. And I submit to you that if there were 38 states willing to get behind a crazy amendment, then our country's already lost. So from our perspective, the best thing we can do is use this process, which allows states to take back power from the federal government because they're the ones who would initiate the amendments convention process. It allows states to change the political dynamic that currently allows the federal government to do anything it wants and gives us a chance, not a guarantee, but a chance that power would shift back to the states and the people away from the federal government, which is already running away.
Okay. Of course, off the top of my head, my first questions are, you're right. I mean, to get 34 states to call a convention?
34 to call, 38 to ratify.
Okay, so we got 34 states, and are you saying, that was a question that we had before, if, say, 20 states say we want it to be a balanced budget amendment, and 14 states say we want it to be, you know, fill-in-the-blank reason, and are you counting those all as a call, or are you going to have 34 states have to say the same reasons?
We think that the based on Rob Nadelson's work in the report that we've published, we think that you have to have the same subject matter and have to have an application from 34 states at roughly the same time. That is what you would expect if, for example, you were going to make an offer on a contract. You know, if multiple people were going to be parties to a contract, you would expect that all of them would do it in the same way and at roughly the same time if they were going to be part of the same contract.
Okay, so we're going to have
the analogy here.
So we're going to have a reason. We're going to say that if 34 states call for an amendments convention for the same reason, do you think that that would limit it to that reason?
Based on the law that of agency, which is what governs all conventions in American history, the answer is yes. Rob Nadelson's paper points that out. Basically, the way to think about it is that the convention is the agent of the states, and the delegates who go there can be dictated to by the states as to the scope of what they can accomplish at the convention. It would violate their duty as an agent to the principal, the states, for them to go outside of the scope. Now, that doesn't mean that illegal things don't happen, but what you're really saying is that something akin to a coup would happen at the convention. And, you know, my response to that is there are easier ways to do coups.
Yeah, floppy disk, corrupt computer elections. The one thing that Lysander Spooner put up, he goes, you know, you're right, this agency thing. He goes, how, one, it could only be bound on the people participating. The people participating said they represented the states, which has absolutely nothing to do with the individuals. And somehow that this contract, this social contract, this constitution, if it applied to anybody, it was the people of the generation that did it, they're dead. So how does it apply to me?
I think Lysander Spoon's criticism is valid. I mean, there is a limitation on these, on the idea that the Constitution is a pure contract. It clearly is not like the kind of contract that actually requires mutual consent from everyone who it affects. It is legally and traditionally and historically been interpreted along the same lines.
Yeah, by whom?
I agree with that philosophically, but that's where the law is.
Yeah, by whom? I mean, by the government, by their Supreme Court. They said, you know what? Yes, we can rule you. We decided.
There's no question that, you know, there is no metaphysical reason to treat our government as a contract. It clearly is not, but that's how the law has treated it. And to the extent that the law is followed, that's how it will continue to be treated. So that's what you can have, what comfort you can have in, is that, you know, the background law here is that the delegates to the convention would be bound as agents to the states to what they were there to do. Now, if they violate that trust, if they go outside of the scope, it's no different than a coup. And my response to that is there are easier ways to have a coup than to have a convention of, you know, dozens if not hundreds of delegates. It'd be far easier for the military just to bump off the president or for someone to buy or blackmail five of the nine Supreme Court justices.
I mean, like Goldman Sachs. Okay, I got a beat on it. You know, I see. This is my opinion. I am of the opinion this is a contract on America thing all over again. It's going to be a Karl Rove, Newt Gingrich, 1994 through Lord knows what as an issue to beat the drum for the conservatives around the country to rally together for us to have, because those other people that won't let us, they're the ones that are hurting America. and after it's already been, you know, beaten to the ground. So I can see that it's a political thing, and I see it coming. And I, you know, we'll follow it and see where it goes. And I'm pretty much be more than happy to talk about it whenever it rises up in the news again. Well, I thank you for coming on, and I'm glad we got to correct that, because I definitely did not want to leave someone with the wrong interpretation on what. But the more that, even with this revelation, it seems to me that it's even more open to do whatever they want. So we'll find out. Time will tell. I'm glad we got to be on record, man.
Thanks, Ernie, and keep in mind, the status quo already is a runaway federal government. What do you have to lose?
The federal government, I hope. I mean, that's not an option. I mean, you know, that's my concern, is they're just going to, you know, put lipstick on the pig again. I mean, you know, we need to reapply. We need to massage that turd. You know, I get it. I understand. All right. Well, thanks for calling in, Nick, and getting that all, you know, set up. Make sure we understand what we're dealing with here. And we'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here from Phoenix, Arizona, where it's still freaking hot. I went out yesterday. Damn. I mean, you know, it was a pretty mild summer, but dang, man, it's like dang. I mean, dang. It's like 110, 105, 100 and something. It's not really that hot until it gets over 107, but dang, it's hot. Well, we already started getting calls. If you guys want to call in, go ahead to 866-986-6397, 866-986-NEWS, 866-986-6397. Now, what we were talking about is Article 5 convention they want to do, and it's the Section 9, the fourth clause, all right? What they're talking about is no capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein or directed to be taken. Now, this is what they mean. As I understand it, there was to be a census so that they could say, okay, the state of Rhode Island probably isn't going to be asked to give the federal government as much money as the state of Massachusetts because they have fewer people. And it was to be proportioned amongst how many people, and then the state owed that. Now, how they collected it from the state to get their federal government cut, you know, that was up to them. But they didn't want that. No, 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 no. What we want is we want to have, you know, get down in the per person. We want to go get the people. And I'm like, okay, that's how they want to do it. All right. So what we did is we go in and we say, if they're going to do it per person, well, that gets kind of, you know, that's kind of, you know, a little invasive from this federal government that the state's supposed to be protecting us from. Well, what do we find out today? The United Kingdom proposes all checks go to the state first. Yay, I feel so much better. The United Kingdom's tax collection agency is putting forth a proposal that all employers send employee paychecks to the government, after which the government would deduct what it deems as appropriate tax and pay the employees by bank transfer. The proposal by Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs stresses the need for employers to provide real-time information to the government so that it can monitor all payments and make a better assessment of whether the correct tax is being paid. Well, we want to make sure they get to determine what the correct tax is. Currently, employers withhold tax and pay the government, providing information at the end of the year, a system known as pay-as-you-earn. There is no option for those employees to refuse withholding and individually file a tax return at the end of the year. So it's getting more and more obvious that you work for the Queen. the man, the federal government. This is starting in the UK now, and I remember it's about a 3 to 5 year delay before it makes it here, whether it's photo radar or anything else. Big Brother surveillance cameras, you know, on every street corner. It's, oh, what are they pushing? Oh, Chicago. Chicago is the shining star for surveillance. Well, who wants to be mayor of Chicago now? Rahm Emanuel from the Obama administration. I'm going, wow, man, you know, you watch these dystopian, apocalyptic kind of B science fiction movies on the evil that comes, 1984, V for Vendetta, Equilibrium, all these, you know, THX 1138. I mean, all these movies that, and you go, heck, man, they're only about 30% as bad as it's really going to be. So you're going, holy moly. And one of the things is that all the paychecks go to the state first. You just have to, like, wow. And this is on CNBC. You know, they're saying, you know, yep, here we go. So would that happen here? And you have this Article 5 convention thing going on. Is that one of the things that they're going to do is say, you know what? Let me tell you, we're going to have a convention, and if they're not going to be talking about the elimination of the income tax, what good is it? If they're not talking about somehow expanding the protection of individual rights, then why am I talking to them? Why am I taking the risk of opening up? Well, what's the answer? Well, it's so bad now, how could it be any worse? I could think of a whole bunch of ways it could be a lot worse. Well, let's go ahead and go to Mike in Kentucky. Go ahead, Mike.
How's it going?
I'm doing more than wonderful. And you?
I'm doing pretty good.
So tell me what's on your mind, man.
Well, I sent you an email. I'm not sure if you read it yet, but pretty much the fifth article, it doesn't allow for amendments after 1808 regarding clause 4.
Okay, so go ahead and explain what you mean, and then I'll.
All right. But basically, what I'm getting to is the 16th Amendment and maybe the 17th Amendment is unconstitutional based on Article 5. It says Article 5 says provided that no amendment which may be made prior. See, it says it could be made prior to year 1808. Except for the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section, first article.
Okay, let me just go ahead and read it and see what it says. You know, blah, 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 it takes two-thirds and three-quarter to ratify, two-thirds to call a convention, or the Congress could do it, or it takes, and then, of course, after you change whatever it is, three-fourths of the states, which is 38 states of the 50, to ratify this, blah, blah, blah. And it says, and ratified or by convention 3/4 thereof as one of the other mode ratification process of Congress, provided that no amendment which may be made prior to year 1808, so 1808, shall in any matter affect the first and fourth clauses of the ninth section of the first article, and that no state, without the state's consent, shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Okay, so what you're saying is what? It says, provided that no amendment, which may be made prior to 08, in any matter affect the first and fourth. I see what you're saying. So it's saying, I mean, the way I'm reading this is saying anything you did prior to 1808 shall not have any of this effect. If you do it after 1808, you can pretty much do whatever you want.
I don't read it that way.
Okay, what does it say? What do you read? Well, I mean, let's go ahead and read it for the audience. They may not have it in front of them. It says you can call a convention and do this, and this is how you ratify it, and blah, 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 provided, okay, that this is once you call this, provided that no amendment, okay, so you can't make any amendment, which may be made prior to year 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first article. So you can't make an amendment before 1808 that would affect slavery and the enumeration of, as a tax collection clause in ninth section, first article, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Now, that part right there is kind of like doing this Second Amendment thing the way the wording is. They make it up any way they want. And it says, and that no state, and it's got a semicolon, and that no state without its consent. So I'm not really sure that part is you can't change before or after 1808. It doesn't make it clear there on this equal suffrage thing.
Well, if you read Section 9, Clause 1, it says you cannot it's pretty much saying that we're going to tax immigrants at $10 a head.
Well, I think it was referring to slaves, but, either way.
Okay, well, whatever. It's implementing a tax, and it's saying you
can't. Well, it's saying impose on such importation. You know, I'm like, if I'm importing someone, it's not like they're immigrating. it's like a product. It's like property. But a tax or duty may not be imposed on such importation not to exceed $10 for each person. So I'm thinking that's kind of referencing slavery. But, that don't mean anything. They can say it means whatever they want.
Okay. Well, what I'm getting to is it says, shall the clause one, says shall not be prohibited by Congress prior to the year 1808. All right. Now, since you're saying that, down in clause four, then you cannot have a direct tax.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and get to that. Can you hold on until the next segment?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go ahead and hold you on. Let's get, because I've done 16th Amendment stuff before in history and everything, and we'll go ahead and. I was kind of hoping to avoid it, but, since you asked and you're ready to talk about it, let's do it. Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. And you can see why this Constitution just means whatever the heck they say it means. That's what it means.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It ain't so groovy when you're screaming in the night. Let me out of this cheap movie.
Yeah! We're back here on Declare Your Independence, and Mike from Kentucky called in. He wanted to, make a point about the fourth clause that is referenced in the Article 5 Convention, what they're talking about, Section 9, Clause 4. So go ahead and make your point. I know you got to go, man. So what is it you wanted to say?
All right, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 1 says whether it be slaves or whatever, but the importation of such persons should not be prohibited by Congress prior to your 1808, but they're going to have a tax at $10 a person. So until 1808, you're going to have a tax of $10 a person.
It's saying you can't stop the importation of them, but we're going to let you have a $10 tax on each person that you ship over here for the fields or whatever. Okay, so let's go ahead and go to the fourth clause.
Okay. Well, before I get there, I'm making my case of why in the fifth article it says, provided that no amendment which may be made prior, it's saying it can be made prior to year 1808, because they just said that you can't touch that tax until 1808. But Article 5 is talking about amendments. So it's saying, well, if you got an amendment, you can abolish or raise a tax per person. That is my point. So if you accept and understand that,
when it says prior to 1808, you can't exceed $10. But let's go ahead and go to the fourth one. I mean, what's the point, the link you're trying to make?
Well, the fourth clause pretty much says there's no direct tax, which is what the 16th Amendment is. And if you look at, I've been looking through several constitutions, and they all say this has been changed by the 16th Amendment. Well, I'm thinking, no, it can't, because it says in Article 5, you cannot change this fourth clause. You cannot change it. You know.
Well, I got the impression it says you can't change it until after 1808. And of course, it says they can change it whatever the heck they want. This is kind of my problem. But the this is why I don't get so bogged down in the language of the Constitution, because it's been interpreted so many different ways in the way that it benefits the government the most. And am I supposed to be bound by anything they did 200 something years ago in the name of my ancestors, and I wasn't even there, and I'm still held to it somehow? And I say, no, I'm not. So I'm, you know, that's kind of where I go, and I kind of clean this up. But the Constitution is not really that long, but I still think it's too long.
Yeah.
But is there some other comment you wanted to make? I understand your point. I just I'm just trying to read it here, and it seems that it's pretty clear what it says.
I did the same thing that you did, because at first I thought, you know, I was like, wow, the 16th Amendment is unconstitutional based on Article 5. Then I said, okay, well, it says 1808, so if you make an amendment after 1808, you're okay. But the way I look at it, they put that portion of or that condition of 1808 because they wanted to get taxed for 10 years or whatever. That, you know, they wanted to have that tax for 10 years. They wanted to have that revenue coming in for at least until 1808. And they said, you know, if you really don't like that tax, you're going to have to go through an amendment. You know, it wasn't just the power Congress was going to have. You had to have the amendment process.
Well, then they did the whiskey rebellion. I mean, you know, right off, they did a whiskey tax, and Pennsylvania probably used the same argument that you made, and they said, no. Yeah, we're not playing. They go, oh, yeah, here's 15,000 troops. It says, yeah, you are. You know, so I think the Constitution, the Constitution was a centralization of power and a ripoff of the Revolution right off the start. So I mean, you can see why. I mean, you look at the verbiage here, and then you look at what they actually did, and then what did they do? They gave it to the Supreme Court that they appointed to say, okay, Fred, you know, and John and James, tell me what up. Is this okay? Yeah, it's okay. Okay, it's okay. It's constitutional, so that's how it works. Hey, I'll let you get back to your family, man. Thanks for calling in, Mike.
All right, thank you.
This is why I used to get all involved in the Constitution, and I looked at it, and I file suit on it, and I go to court, and I'm, you know, just being all kinds of butthead about it, and they just don't care. They just don't care. You know, and the one thing that was called, what really got me the first time I read it straight through, I was in my, probably about 27. And immediately I understood everything that I was looking at as far as election law and all that kind of stuff, they were violating. And I'm going, oh, what? Because the 14th Amendment, you know, this is citizenship rights. And I know everybody says, we just got enslaved under this federal umbrella by them, you know, making sure that we were U.S. citizens as opposed to having the state represent us. But in the first clause here, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process, nor deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. That equal protection clause is what, you know, just hit me right in the forehead, because what it says is you can't give special rights or privileges that don't equally apply to everyone, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Okay, well, the first thing I was looking at is I'm going, how is it that if I register with a particular political party, a private club, I mean, it's a private club, right? No, it's not. What is it, parties of the state? Are we communist here? Are we the Soviet Union? We have parties of the state? You know, the primaries that would pick here in Arizona, precinct committeemen, have to be paid for with tax dollars of people that aren't registered with those particular parties or may not even vote. Heck, not even old enough to vote. You know, it could be felons and can't vote, but they're going to be taxed to fund an election of an internal party process. And I'm going, That's not right. Then if you're registered Republican or Democrat, you get free access from your party for the voter database. Well, if you ran third party or independent, you didn't. Well, now we do because we got ballot status as libertarians. But at the time, I was a Republican. I went independent, and I got standing to file a lawsuit. 44 election laws went all the way to the Ninth Circuit. And this was one of the main points that I was bringing up. I'm going, tell me how this doesn't give special rights or privileges to someone based on their voter registration. As a candidate, you got to pay 10 cents a name in electronic form. It was like $200,000-$300,000 just to be equal with your Republican and Democratic counterparts. So as a county chairman of the Libertarian Party here, Maricopa County in Phoenix area, Valley of the Sun, I just made it free to anybody that wanted it. Communist, fascist, well, I didn't care. I'm going, look, if I'm getting it, the benefit of this list, because it's from derived from tax dollars, well, it's immoral for me to not make it available to any and everybody that wants it. That's stupid law to begin with. So I would give it out to everybody. Well, the party's freaked out. They didn't like it. And the reason was is because they go, oh, we'll give you a deal. We'll only charge you 7 cents a name if you go through the party. Now, if you go through the county recorder's office, you're going to pay 10 cents a name. We'll do you a solid and do it for 7 cents a name because we love you. They make, you know, tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on the dissemination of this database that was derived from taxpayer money. Tell me that's not fascist. So I'm going, okay. So I understood this. If we're going to use this 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause thing, then it comes down to you had all the king's men that could be secret. If you were a judge or law enforcement, you could file with the county recorders and say, all my data is secret. My deeds of trust, my mortgage, any judgment against me, where I live, what I do, I'm secret. I get to be secret because I'm the king's man. You, if you got an eight, I had a young daughter who was the first one getting a voter age. And, you know, back when we used to think, hey, man, we might want to participate in this thing. And she never did. I mean, she, you know, I think she did register just this last year to help with the Libertarian voter registration. But, she's 25 now. When she was 18, we're like, here's a very attractive young, petite, blonde going out in the world, going to school. What all they needed was her name. And they could look up and see her phone number, where she lived, mother's maiden name, part of her Social Security number, what her occupation was, saw public information. Well, I'm going, you know, I don't feel good about that. But what I felt worse about was the fact that the judge and the police, and then later we went to a big court case. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Scott Decker's coming back in to tell this story, this very story. Because it was terrible what they, we'll save it for tomorrow. But the thing is that, do you understand the concept? If you're going to have a constitution, all right, well, what's some of the deals? Well, you're not going to give special rights or privileges that don't equally apply to everyone. There is not this class status recognized in law. You signed the right piece of paper. You joined the right party. You know, what was this, the Communist Party? The Nazi Party? You know, how else am I supposed to look at this? So at what point do you lose total confidence in the government to defend individual rights? Or to even uphold the contract? Or even, you know, pay any kind of legitimate credence to what they actually say that their deal is? They take an oath to defend. I'm so done with it. But I understand how they're going to use it. I can see what's coming. And it's a 2-year project. It's going to start now, and it's going to go through the 2012 election cycle, and they're going to try and use this Tea Party thing that they took over and created in their own heads to try and beat us over the head with whatever it is they want to make the issues. And I'll guarantee you, it's not about individual liberty. We'll be right back.